Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome to our second hour here on Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. It's a real pleasure at this point to welcome in the studio Joe Falls from the Tohono O'Neill Park. Welcome, Joe.
Nice to be here.
It's a real pleasure. Let me give a brief introduction. Joe's been at the park for 24 years. That's 2 years after this unique Tucson park was established in 1986. First, as I suspect, a jack-of-all-trades office manager, then education curator, and today Joe is the director of public programs and visitor services. From the training of hundreds of park docents, expanding and diversifying programs, including school outreach and international travel, introducing interpretive signage to the park grounds, and securing grant funding for a variety of projects, Joe's career has evolved right along with the park's dynamic change, and I suspect will continue to do so in the future. Originally a history major with distinction from the University of Arizona and a 1980 law school graduate, Joe is a seasoned author and collaborator at state, regional, and national levels, at zoo, botanical garden, library, and museum conferences, a public voice for Tohono O'Neill along that way. Joe has appeared on the air and in print, sharing the work of the park and illustrating the unique connections between the nature, art, and culture of the Sonoran Desert. Joe's lifetime passion for education continues today as her joint role as education curator at Tohono O'Neill and overseeing the work of the exhibit department in the development and installation of changing art and cultural displays, the marketing of the park by the communications coordinator, and the recruitment and training of volunteers for the volunteer coordinator. So, Joe, the fact indeed, I started you off by saying you've been there for almost all of those 25 years that the park is now celebrating. Tell us about that career adventure for you personally. Did you ever think this would be the longest ride you'd have?
Actually, no, I did not. The park opened April 19th, 1985. So as you know, it's our 25th anniversary. And I started working there in May of the following year. I was an out-of-work lawyer and was actually making a living creating walking sticks out of saguaro ribs, and had brought them up to the small gift shop that the park had at that time to sell them. The gift shop manager was getting ready to take a sabbatical with her husband and was looking for someone to run the shop for about 3 months. Asked me if I would be interested. I said, sure, why not? I need the money. She took my resume into the then executive director, Alice Herman, who called me up and said, I need to talk to you and I would rather offer you something different. And they were at that point looking for an office manager. And so I took on that role thinking, oh, you know, I'll give this a year or two until, you know, something else comes along.
In the law field or something.
Yes, that was 24 years ago.
Boy, and so along that way, I mean, that's clearly the tagline for this show is your path is created by walking on it.
Exactly.
And what the irony, the pun, of course, you were walked in there with a walking stick even. And, you know, that was a complete, you know, an unstaged conversation here.
Well, and that was not my background. You know, right. As you said in the introduction, my bachelor's degree was in history and communications, turned around and went back and got a law degree, and yet basically here I am working in the world of ecology and the natural environment. And so when I took over docent training in 1991 and would be running an 18-week course for a lot of retirees for the most part, people who would say, oh, but I come from economics, or I was an engineer, or I was a teacher, I was this or that. And my response was, I've learned it. It's self-taught. You know, you can do it too. And it's often just by doing, you know, it's walking the trails, it's watching the gardens, it's, you know, taking note of what's happening in the world around you.
And I tell you, that is specifically the experience of coming to Tohono O'Neill. It is one that really pulls on you, my opinion, to really get involved in the environment. So for those who haven't had the opportunity to visit your 50-acre site, could you take us on a brief kind of virtual tour here?
I think the nice thing about the park is that it is open to personal interpretation. There is not a defined path that you need to follow when you arrive there. You have a choice immediately as you come in. You know, do you want to spend some time exploring art and culture in our exhibit house? The history and background for that is that it's the original adobe that was built on the properties in 1937 as a winter retreat for some well-to-do people from the East Coast. Today, it's a place where we display the work of local artists. We try to interpret the way that they see the Sonoran Desert and the Southwest. It could be everything from Arizona Designer Craftsman to a furniture show to our current exhibit, which is Tohono O'Toole Park A to Z, which is a look at the park's history through the letters of the alphabet. So we asked both staff and volunteers to give us their suggestions. And so what does A stand for besides agave? Well, it also stands for architecture. You know, what is B besides bats and birds? You know, it may be some other clue to what Tohono O'Toole Park is all about. So you have that opportunity. You also have the opportunity to visit some of our demonstration gardens. If you are a landscaper, if you're looking to redo your backyard at home, lots of ideas for both native and near-native arid-adapted plants that you can incorporate into a landscape. Suggestions and ideas for ways to save precious water resources. We have one garden totally devoted to water harvesting. It's the Sinagua Garden. The Desert Living Courtyard gives you 10 small garden vignettes of different approaches to what could be traditional or even exotic landscapes, such as our Moorish Garden, yet interpreting it with Arizona native plants.
And have those gardens evolved and changed over time with the tastes that individuals have in their particular approaches? Because, I mean, architecture, botanical gardens, and so on, they kind of go in some kind of cycle, don't they?
Sure. And, for example, the actual demonstration gardens, which are in the center of the park, are the original gardens that were built by the Wilsons when they were beginning to open Tohono O'Toole. And if you look at them today, it seems that their focus is often mostly on hardscapes, different ways to create a patio or a wall or a water feature. And the three newest gardens at the park all have come into being since 2000. All of them are repurposed parking lots. And so as part of our master plan, we took a look at the landscape of the park and noted that the traffic and the parking was in the center, was in the heart of the park, had the best views. The idea was to move that out and away and set it off of the main artery streets and instead turn those interior spaces into gardens. And so in the first is what used to be a staff lot is the Sinagua Garden, our water harvesting garden that collects runoff from the Education Center parking lot as well as other slopes and areas of the maintenance yard. The Desert Living Courtyard is what was the parking lot for the former Haunted Bookshop, which was run by the Wilsons and is now our education center. And the most recent of the gardens is our Sonoran Seasons Garden, which replaces the main parking lot. And that's kind of a microcosm of what Tohono O'Toole is. So for that visitor with limited time or limited mobility, they can basically take a walk through the five, not four, but five seasons of the Sonoran Desert in a very short tour.
That's lovely. The you use the word hardscape. Earlier, we have architecture in my own family background, so I wanted to make sure our listeners understood hardscape and softscape.
Hardscape refers to the hard surfaces. It could be as simple as a gravel path, or it could be a flagstone patio, or it could be a concrete driveway. It's the non-planted areas in a landscape. And then, of course, the softscape would refer to the planted areas.
I would suggest, though, for those who frequent your park, certainly as it's evolved and changed, that there's almost this third dimension, and that's almost the emotional feel when you take advantage of the total environment mm-hmm. that you all are setting up. For example, the wildlife that are there, that are taking advantage of the flowers and the pollination process and so on.
And amazingly, in a lot of this public surveys that we do, which is one of the things that I get involved in as part of visitor services, most frequently, people mention, the ambiance, the seclusion, the hidden oasis feel of Tohono O'Toole Park, that it is this wonderful 49 acres perched at probably the most busy intersection in Tucson of Oracle and Ina Roads. And yet, when you come into the park, you lose that connection to the busy.
Shangri-La exactly. Type feeling, yeah.
We've worked very hard to maintain that open feeling, to maintain the wildlife corridors that crisscross the park. Several years ago, we were able to put a perimeter fence up to help with issues of unauthorized access and wildcat trails. And we were very careful to have the lower strands, you know, non-barbed and at a height that would still allow the coyotes and the javelina and the rabbits and everyone else to continue to use the washes and the paths that they've been using, you know, for decades. We have probably over 30 resident species of birds that can be seen just about any time of the year. And then, of course, we're treated to all those wonderful migrants who come through during the spring and fall migrations. So birding tours are a big feature at the park. So that any time that you come, you have an opportunity to, if you can take the time, just sit quietly someplace and see what happens. We have a lot of plants that are attractive to butterflies and hummingbirds. And so finding a bench somewhere and sitting down near the penstemons or the salvias or the ageratums gives you this never-ending show of wildlife coming and going. We've been blessed over the years with some spectacular sightings. We had two or three years in a row where a pair of long-horned owls would show up and perch out in the back 40. Most recently, we've had two successive back-to-back years of Cooper's hawks successfully raising young in the high trees of the park.
Which is very unique for this part of the state.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's been wonderful watching those kids grow up and, you know, move out on their own. And we've had, you know, bobcats, my mother and then her successive daughters raising kittens in the park. And being a regular feature for visitors to say, oh, it was so amazing because today I saw one of the young bobcats, or I saw the Cooper's hawk perched, you know, in the parking lot. And it's those good feelings that people can take away with them that helps make a difference in how they perceive the natural world.
I think the other piece of your park, of course, and though you do have standing exhibits, that there's a lot of rotating events that go on that you folks seem to seize the moment. Though I'm sure it takes planning well in advance, but there's this constant run and change that's capitalizing on what's going on, but yet it's staying true to the common threads that are there at Tohono O'odham.
Well, as we do say, we do have our changing exhibits, and again, as I said, they're related to the Southwest. Sometimes they're a traveling show that we bring in. I know we did one year with the National Park Service that dealt with the fire in national forests, and both the good side and the bad side. As I said, you know, right now we have Tohono O'odham A to Z. Coming up, though, in October is Night Moves, which is a look at artwork representing what happens in the desert after dark. In addition to that, we do a series of special events that, again, are tied to almost a seasonal look at the Sonoran Desert. Coming up this fall is Park After Dark, which will be tied to the Desert After Dark images that we're showing. But Park After Dark is a family event. We bring out animal rehabbers with some of their educational critters so that people get an opportunity to see bats or bobcats or owls up close and learn that, you know, those reptiles are not quite as scary as you might think they are. In the wintertime, we do holiday nights to celebrate the seasons and to allow people that weekend after Thanksgiving and the first weekend in December to stroll the park with literally a million little twinkling lights through the trees and along the trails and paths.
Joe, the ongoing inspiration for all of these, you know, new things that you continue to do, and it's obviously this has evolved over those, you know, 24 years that you've been there. But what's been the source of that, the impetus for that? Has it been the visitors themselves coming forward? Has it been your reaching out and seeing how other museums or parks have done things?
I have to say that, yeah, at the base of all of this would be a very talented and creative staff who are very involved and engaged in what they do, who have a desire to share what they love about the Sonoran Desert, what they love about Tohono O'odham Park, so that we are always looking for what might interest our visitors. We do ask for visitors' input. We take their suggestions to heart, and we try to offer them what's feasible for us to do. I know that this whole show is kind of revolved around nonprofits, and your previous speaker was dealing with some of the issues that we face, primarily which are financial, mm-hmm. and it's finding the support and the funding. We also do spend time looking at what is happening in other parts of the state and other parts of the country in terms of what museums and other botanical gardens are doing to attract visitors and to give them that welcoming and beneficial experience. That's part of the reason for networking, for attending conferences, to sharing ideas and bringing that back here. As a matter of fact, Park After Dark originally grew out of a concept almost 15 years ago from the Tucson Association of Museums, who wanted to find a way to reintroduce Tucson residents to the museums that are in their own backyard. So often people tend to leave town for the summer, or they don't think about going outside and doing anything. And so the original Park After Dark was a summer event, and it was conceived as a summer open house to reintroduce Tucson to what Tucson has to offer.
And indeed, that idea that many times we don't get out from our own immediate surroundings until we have visitors anyway. So the idea of how you can have stay-at-home tourism to take advantage of it. The other thing that I, we just came back into town yesterday, as you may have heard, coming from a tour of the New England as well as in Chicago, and we went to the very famous Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. And the one disappointing factor, I would have to say, is one of the special shows they had has now been so overrun with commercialism and cheesiness and, you know, electronic light shows and mock actors and so on, that my kids right away picked up on, but all we did is we wanted to see the dolphins. Mm-hmm. So how in this day and age of the electronic gizmotrons and so on do you nonetheless, though, hold at bay some of that so that your park experience can still be that genuine and true to the native environment?
Amazingly, I grew up in Chicago. I remember the Shedd Aquarium as a child.
It's lovely. It's fabulous.
Absolutely. We recently participated in a wonderful nationwide survey of museums, which was primarily geared to determine what is it that the child who goes to a museum takes with them as an adult to make them to continue to be a museum goer when they grow up. A lot of times, especially in larger cities or with school districts that can afford it, field trips are a big part of going to school, and field trips therefore include visits to museums. What is it that that child experiences that turns them into a museum goer as an adult? And one of the things that was coming out of this survey was that it had to do with the curiosity level. And it often wasn't the electronic gizmo that made the difference. Many museums today are faced with an audience of children, especially, who are much more tuned into the electronic world than those my age were as children. There is a fear that it has to be quicker, faster, changing constantly in order to continually engage them because their attention spans may be shorter. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. What we've tried to do is to make the park something that is self-interpreting so that you can come,
you can
pick up a map.
Experience.
Exactly. You can pick up a map. You can follow it if you choose. You can wander the trails if you don't. We have interpretive signage in specific areas, such as our riparian habitat, or such as in the Sinagua Garden, to talk about not just, you know, how to do rainwater harvesting at home, but the sidebars are, how have plants and animals adjusted to living in a desert with low water uses? Right now I'm engaged in working on new interpretive signage for our geology wall, which is very off-putting to a lot of people because geology is a very technical subject. And so we're trying to make it something very simple so that people can have, you know, a clear understanding of what makes the geology of this part of southern Arizona.
Interesting. One of the things that I think is a very unique feature of your organization is your propagation department.
Yes.
And the fact that you gather and harvest seeds, and this is a longer-term perspective.
Now, Russ Burrow, who unfortunately could not be here today, is our curator of plants. And Karen Kabara is the staff person who works with him in the propagation greenhouse. We've been doing propagation basically since the park began. And the idea in those days was simply to acquire the unavailable plant material for the landscape itself, because there are many areas of the park which are natural, as they have been, you know, for the last 100 years. Other areas have been developed. And Matt Johnson, the first grounds curator, had to go out and find those plants from different subdivisions of the Sonoran Desert or even from the Chihuahuan Desert to incorporate. And the greenhouse sort of grew out of that. And today, Russ is working very hard to promote little-known native plants that are entirely appropriate for Tucson landscapes, but nobody's growing them. Every year, we have two plant sales, one in the spring and one in the fall, and each one features one of those plants that he will have been working on for perhaps a year or two or even 3 years in advance to grow up enough to have available for sale. And right now, Russ is working on acquiring patents for some amazing hybrid penstemons that he has been breeding.
And so that you're, and even the fact that you have a cafe there on grounds,
the tea room,
and
yes.
tea room, and that I understand some of those plants provide sustenance to be included in the products.
Yeah, those come out of the Ethnobotanical Garden, which is a garden with two seasonal crops. During the summer, right now, monsoon season, these are all native plants grown originally by the Hohokam or the Tohono O'odham, such as their squashes and melons, their corn, especially their tepary beans. And then in the fall and winter, we will grow those plants that would have been introduced by Europeans as they came out here, which are cool season plants. So wherever we can provide chilies or squashes or melons to the tea room for inclusion on their menus, usually on a limited basis because there's a limited supply. And also in the past, the tea room itself is in one of the second original home on the property built in the 60s, which had a certain number of fruit trees around it. And so they make use of some of those lemons and oranges and kumquats, again, on the menu, so that it's becoming an integral part of everything that happens at Tohono O'odham.
For those of you who may have joined us late, I'm speaking with Jo Falls, who's the Director of Public Programs and Visitor Services at Tohono O'odham, and her background is in history and in law. Although, Jo, one would never know that you aren't perhaps a botanist yourself or, you know, a history buff specific to the Sonoran Desert and so on. So I just see so much passion that comes through you. Was there ever any point in this 24-year journey that you said, did I regret not, and should I go back, so to speak, or go over?
Probably only when you get the paycheck every week, and it's not quite as large as you might like it to be. No. What I look at is they talk about finding your bliss, and yeah. I think that that's something that I found at Tohono O'odham Park, and I think there are many on staff who have done the same thing. I'm not the only long-lived staff person there. Vicki Donkersley and Russ Burrow have both been there for 20 years or more. We have a couple of other staff, Linda Wolf and Lee Mason, who have been there 10 years and more. So there is a cachet, there is an aura around the park that, despite the difficulties in finding enough money sometimes to keep the doors open, the difficulties in dealing with fewer hands than you'd like to have to help with the project, you feel that wonderful sense of accomplishment and achievement in the end when you can step back and say, yes, but look at what we've done.
And particularly, you know, you said you find your bliss. I would suggest that probably those of you who've been there so long, with how you've expanded, grown, and shifted the park, you've actually also at the same time created your bliss.
Well, I think that's true.
It's a manifestation of all of your own collective interests and your curiosity and your desire to explore.
And that's why saying that at Tohono O'odham Park, we're all about connecting nature, art, and culture takes those factors in. So those of us who are a little more drawn to nature have their avenue. Those who are drawn to art can have their avenue. And then, of course, culture ties the whole thing together.
Fabulous. That's great. Well, Jo Falls, again, from the Tohono O'odham Park. Real quickly, how can people learn about the organization?
You can reach our website at www.tohonoochulpark.org.
Very good. Thanks again for joining us here
on
Circles of Chance.
It's
a pleasure. Stay tuned, folks. We've got one final segment with Zichelle Lee, who's with Essentials, a scent and aromatherapy organization in California. We'll be back shortly here on Circles of Change on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson News Talk FM. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.